Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, and my guest tonight is Dr. Matthew James. Welcome to the show, Dr. James.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Now, do you prefer to be called Doc, Doctor, Matt, Matthew?
Matthew's fine.
Matthew.
Yeah. I'm still not used to the doctor title yet.
Now, what's your doctorate in?
Psychology.
Ooh! Did you go in a particular direction, like Jungian, or?
I focused on health psychology because that was the... That's one of the major topics of HUNA is health, mental health, really being in control of your own physical state of being. So I thought it was a really good way to look at the Western approach to health, having been brought up in a lineage of HUNA that's more of an ancient approach.
Okay, I want you to define HUNA, but before you do, let me just let our inform our listeners who you are so they can concentrate on your definition there. But you're... the president of the American Pacific University, and is that an online university or is it located at a physical location?
Well, we have online an online master's degree in transpersonal psychology, and then we have live seminars and trainings that I do all around the world.
Oh, okay. And so you do both esoteric studies as well as clinical therapeutic disciplines, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you're also the president of something called the Empowerment Partnership?
And that's our seminar and training division. That's the company that's the aspect of the university that does the live HUNA training.
Okay. And you travel everywhere, Europe, Asia, Canada?
Yeah, I get to travel around a lot.
Wow. Do you like that?
I do. Actually, I do. I enjoy it.
So, now, okay, this thing about HUNA, it's a cutting-edge therapeutic technique. It's a... ancient science of consciousness and energy healing. That description kind of sounds like a lot of things. So how do you differentiate HUNA from some of the other healing therapies that are out there?
Well, HUNA is a modern label for an ancient system of empowerment of the mind, body, and spirit that was prevalent here in the islands prior to Western thinking coming over here. And some of the first people that came to the islands wrote in their journals that they found a group of people that were almost completely devoid of mental and physiological disease. And HUNA is the study of the psychology and energy work that made that possible. That was a mouthful.
Yeah, it really was. So, obviously, I mean, HUNA is a Hawaiian word, right?
That's correct.
So it's something that was developed in Hawaii?
Yes, and a well-known kahuna that lived in Kona, whose name was Daddy Bray.
What's a kahuna?
A kahuna is a person that, I guess the modern word would be healer, but the Western word healer implies that someone's doing something to you.
Okay.
It wasn't believed in Hawaii that you could do anything to someone else. You could help to facilitate a healing. But you wouldn't, the easiest definition of kahuna would be a keeper of the concealed wisdom, a keeper of the light, but not as in the physical light, as in the light bearing the torch, having to be at the head of the path or the head of a lineage.
I love the way you say Hawaii. Could you say that again?
Hawaii.
Gives me chills.
And so his lineage that he carried, Daddy Bray, he was a very well-known kahuna. There's a few books on him and the healing work that he did.
Right.
He had passed it on to his son, Papa Bray, and unfortunately no one else in the family wanted to carry it forward, and it was taught to my father. and it was taught to me at a very early age. So it's
how young were you?
I was probably began my teachings in Huna at the age of 13.
Wow.
So this is something I grew up with. It was really weird when I began to teach on the mainland. I remember one of the first students that walked up to me, I was with a large group in Toronto, and someone walked up to me and said, my fear protects me. And I couldn't understand that, having grown up with this, that knowing that fear doesn't do anything for you. You know, I was in my 20s, this is well over 10 years ago now, and I'm sitting there going, how is this possible that this person can believe that fear as an energy, if you hold on to it, would do any positive? It was so different than the thinking that I had been brought up with.
So, Huna, that practice embodies the idea that you can do something positive with fear?
That you can, by letting go of your fear,
yeah,
bring in a positive learning. And that's exactly what she did. She realized that the fear actually drew negative or harmful situations to her. And when she let go of the fear, I've kept up with her now for the past 10 years. She's, by her own admission, living a life where she is feeling fulfilled as an individual, because it's not the fear that gives you any knowledge. It's when you release that, you bring in a learning, or the Hawaiian word would be anō, a seed that you plant inside yourself that grows into knowledge that is then put forth into the future.
Oh, okay.
So you don't actually turn the fear into a positive. I mean, I guess you do. I've heard people in, you know, Western seminars say, turn that fear into a positive. I get what they're saying. Huna would just have a little bit of a different approach, and that is to release the fear and then bring in the positive.
So how does this actually, in practice, how do you do this? I'll give you an actual thing that I'm dealing with. Will that work?
Sure.
Something that's coming up for me, because I'm all about finding out what the fear is in the back and the behind. So I've been hitting the. What's coming up against is like these people who are kind of. They may be into tantric sex. They might be into meditation, but they're approaching it from what I would consider, and this is a label and a judgment. I would consider it an elitist and hierarchical view.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that they say are, you know, like nobody else knows this, and only certain people are allowed to have this information, that kind of mentality. And so I'm finding that this is coming up a lot in the last month, or 2 months even. And it's various different people, and I'm sitting here going, I know the universe wants my attention. What am I supposed to learn from this? Now, if I was to try to go in and find what I'm afraid of...
Well, it might not necessarily be a fear.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like you're really afraid of much.
Well, I'm certainly triggered. I'm triggered as in I'm starting to judge these people and feeling really annoyed.
Now, that's a different issue, and one of the things that... One of the things that I have learned, and this was a major part of my focus in researching in the Western approach to healing, and that is of forgiveness. And the word that was used in ancient times in Hawaii was being pono, being right. It doesn't mean right versus wrong. It means right as in you're comfortable in your skin. And the best analogy that I can give you is that I'm sure you've heard of the DVD, The Secret.
Oh, I've got it.
Oh, okay.
I own it.
Well, I trained one of the people that was featured on that, and yet what he taught was a simplified version or a watered-down version. Now, there's two different things that could have happened after I heard about this or what was taught. One is that I could get exactly what you're saying, judgmental about it, and really say, this isn't right the way that it was taught, or the light that it was put in doesn't give the entire picture. However, there's another perspective, and that is that not everyone on the planet is ready to hear about Huna. Huna is really for someone who finds that there's something missing in their life, like a hole that they have that they can't fill it with anything else. And not everyone's ready for that. Not everyone experiences that. Not everyone asks the really big question of why am I here?
Okay.
And that's one of the themes that my students keep running across with me.
Uh-huh.
And so I look at the DVD, The Secret, and I say to myself, in ancient times, the knowledge that was put into The Secret, that was public knowledge. Everyone knew about this. It didn't have to be taught. And in fact, since the Secret and since other similar type teachings have been put out, the people that have been coming to my workshops are coming in with a greater knowledge and understanding that allows me to teach to a greater depth now.
Oh.
And so what you sometimes just need to do with the situation is really find out, is there something that I need to do about this, right? In life, you either got to let go of the negativity that you have about it.
Right.
And once you've let it go, you then need to ask yourself, should I take any action? Is there anything I should do? Now, Veronica, you're doing a radio show. You're taking action. So you wouldn't want to put anything negative into your show. You would definitely want to move forward with being pono, with being right with yourself and knowing that other people are going to say whatever they say. All
mm-hmm.
you need to do is focus on your own path, and that will empower you.
But, okay, but don't you believe that if a particular set of circumstances comes up over and over and over again in a short window of time,
mm-hmm.
that's a learning opportunity?
Well, I don't actually think that it doesn't take a number. It's just one. Anytime something happens in your universe that catches your attention, there's probably something for you to learn from it.
Right.
It doesn't take two or three.
Yeah, well, if it happens repeatedly, I assume I am being dense. Yeah. And there must be something that, you know, they, I always say they, I don't know who they is, but it's like they are trying to get my attention.
Right. Actually, it's from a Jungian and from a Huna perspective, it's your unconscious mind trying to get your attention by showing you this because of our limited ability to see, hear and experience everything that's going on around us. What we do experience is definitely a message from the Hawaiian word is unihipili, or your unconscious mind, your lower self. And so the bigger question is, what is it that you need to learn from this? What do
okay.
you need to do with
well,
your own community?
Well, let's go into this concept of forgiving,
mm-hmm.
because I can tell you that I definitely have judgments against. And I'm going to use the word against because I think that's the form that my judgment takes.
Mm-hmm.
I have a judgment against the idea of exclusivity,
mm-hmm.
that other people are not allowed to access this information because we're special, we're chosen, and you're not.
Have you ever, in ancient times in Hawaii, there was only one of three things that you could do. That would be, I guess they had three categories of things that needed to be forgiven. One was a hala, and a hala is to miss the path. We've all missed the path.
Right.
A heva is to go overboard or to excess, and we've all done that too.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is an ino, where you actually set out to cause harm.
Mm.
And those are the more, you know, the physical harms, or you have...
Oh, these people are definitely not setting out to do harm.
Right, and so that's just it. It's a hala or a heva. And so in ancient times in Hawaii, it was a couple things were known. One of them is that we've done it, and so we would want to be forgiven.
Right.
So we should forgive others. And the second thing is that really you only harm one person holding on to unforgiveness, and that's you.
Right.
There's only one person that you hold on to it. One of my teachers, one of my kumu said, it will take your entire lifetime to learn how to play God in your own universe. So before you start thinking about going to play God in someone else's, let them get their own lessons. Let them get their own learning.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to focus on yourself and that you forgive others because you have probably in some way done the same thing. And you just need to know that it's okay.
Just talking to you, I think I realized that my trigger actually goes back to the Christian church that I was raised in. So right now the people that are in front of me might be talking about Tantra or meditation, or Buddhism, or whatever, but it's really the same concept, which is that we're better than those other people. And that was, I was raised in a Christian cult that felt that everybody was going to die in the end times, except for the people that were going to this church who were going to go to a place of safety in a jet.
The type of jet.
So that was, wouldn't that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
are you talking about a really nice jet or just like?
Oh, yeah, no, this pastor had already bought the jet. He had a couple
very nice.
Of them.
Okay.
So I hear a resentment in there. I hear that I have a resentment against this church that I was raised in, and it's kind of, so that would be the trigger.
Well, I worked with a woman. She had come to my training, and I was doing one of my seminars in Los Angeles. And she came in, and she said, you know, anytime someone raises their voice at me, I really think that they're angry with me, and I have this strong reaction where I just put my foot down. And I said, but what if they're raising their voice in excitement? And she said, well, I never really thought about that. It's any raising of the voice. And she shared something with me. She said that she had been really abused badly by authority figures in her past. And she went into some detail, and I said, you know, my heart goes out to you. I've never experienced that. So I don't have any words that I could say. All I can say is that your reaction to this now is out of proportion. If I get excited, my voice goes up, and if you thought that was anything other than excitement, that's a reaction you have control over.
Right.
That's something that you can take back. Now, the process of releasing negative emotions, which we did in the seminar that I taught in L.A., she let go of the fear. And after a two-day weekend, she came up to me and she said, I get it now. She said, I get that I hadn't dealt with my stuff from the past, and so it was clouding my vision of what was going on right now.
Right.
And I just did this a couple of weeks ago, so I haven't heard back from her. I always say to my students, follow up with me, tell me how it's going.
Right.
By the end of the seminar, though, she was sitting there going, I get it, that this fear, this anger from the past, these negative emotions that you hold on to, they really do shade your view of how things are right now, and it's really you just wanting to let go of something or to release it.
Oh, and I would much rather that I was amused by,
yeah, that's a much
by
better
this
place
thing,
to be.
Huh?
Yeah, that amusement would be a good.
I mean, I could just, oh, well, that's interesting that person needs that, because, you know, it's obvious anybody who needs to feel like they're better than the rest of people on this planet obviously doesn't feel that good about themselves.
Sure, and the funny thing is that.
But I'm much more intrigued with why I care.
And you know,
why is this sticking in my craw? You know, it's like, you know, a day later, and I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the same thing that I had to tell myself, because I went through this. I went through a time in my life. The first thing is that life's about learning. Life is an aim. It's not some sort of end that when you get to happiness, you're done. You get happiness in a day, you need to get happiness the next day, and the day after that, and the day after that. So it's really, life is an aim, and it's about learning.
Yes.
And I've gotten angry at things before. I have a fourth generation Huna lineage, and I've gone into towns where I've had people come into my seminar and say, why should I take your seminar? So-and-so down the road is advertising himself as a kahuna, and after a two-day certification, giving out kahuna certificates. That would be the equivalent of turning people into PhDs. I mean, the kahunas in ancient times were not just the PhDs. They were the, like, if you have all the medical doctors who are heart surgeons, there's one that is the one that everyone recognizes as being just gifted with heart surgery. That, in ancient times in Hawaii, would have been the kahuna. And no one in ancient times would have ever called themselves a kahuna. Most enlightened people on the planet refer to themselves as students or people on the path, just like everyone else.
Right.
And I remember being, you know, early in my seminar and training teachings and running into instances where these people were saying, I'm a kahuna, I'll turn you into a kahuna in a two-day training.
Wow.
And being angry about it and then going, wait a minute, I just need to stick to my own path. And it was a powerful learning. And you never beat yourself up for getting a learning on the path. You never do that, because it teaches you who you are. And sometimes when you're flat on your face on the path, that may be the very thing that you need to have experienced to get up and take the next step.
So if, let's go on the assumption that I have a resentment against the family of origins church, because their premise was that all these people were going to die because they weren't going to be on our jet plane living in a cave waiting for Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How would I use HUNA to forgive the church that obviously I have some resentment against in this? Because I'm going to assume this is my trigger. This is why these other people who are doing Buddha and Tantra and whatnot, they're coming in with similar scripting, mm-hmm. and it's triggering me. So how would I forgive the church that I was raised in?
Well, the process that I teach of Ho'oponopono, it takes about 45 minutes, just the process alone, and that's without the explanation ahead of time.
Oh, okay. So we're not going to... Well,
it does
okay.
take a little bit of time.
Whatever it is you think you can share with my listening audience.
But here's what I share, and I've gone on a lot of radio shows, and so I do have something to share, because that's definitely people that I've had callers call in and say, well, why are you on the show telling us all about this, and it's 45 minutes? No, okay. Seriously, though, forgiveness begins with a change in your thinking. And the first thing is that instead of forgiveness being an option, you make forgiveness a required action, that you've probably missed the path, you've probably gone overboard into excess, and therefore it's not an option as to whether or not you forgive others. It's a requirement, because you would want that yourself. And the second thing is you change your language. Rather than saying, I'm sorry, what you do is you begin to, with the people around you, you say, please forgive me, and I forgive you too. You create that connection. Everything in life boils down to an energetic connection.
Hmm.
And energy flows like an alternating current. I'm sorry doesn't make any connection. It kind of ends right about where your words disappear into the nothingness. It just kind of goes out and stops. But when you say, please forgive me, you're asking for a response. And when you say, I forgive you too, you've completed the connection.
Hmm.
And what that will do is that will facilitate a change in your experience of the situation. And that's with people past and present. You can do that in your mind. And what that will do is that will open up the possibility for you to become Pono. A very simple and easy thing to do.
Okay, so let me. Can you make it more tangible for me? I have a resentment, and I'm sure some of my listeners out there must have a resentment against the church they were raised in, or they might have one against the school teacher, or somebody who's not actually present in their life right now. So a past resentment that maybe is causing a stumbling block now. How does that look for me specifically? I can't say to the church, please forgive me.
You'd probably want to pick someone. One of the lineage that I carry, my father studied with a woman by the name of Morna Simeona. And in fact, she's the person that taught Dr. Hugh Len, who's going around teaching about Ho'oponopono. We also studied with her. And so we carry that lineage of Ho'oponopono. And the approach is that you pick the person. You pick the person rather than the thing. There's usually someone.
Okay, so like I could pick the pastor general, the guy who started the church.
That'd be perfect.
Because I definitely have a hate-on for that guy. Now, it sounds to me like HUNA is basically saying that if you have a resentment, it's probably because you also need to be forgiven for something.
Well, it could be. See, there's the other aspect of it, which is more of the Hawaiian word, e'ihuana'uluna, which would be, anyway, the English translation is that which is above is like that which is below. And it is the law of correspondence. And it's that connection that when there's someone to forgive, you usually need a forgiveness in your own direction.
Yeah.
And I was working with a gentleman who had come to our HUNA workshop. We hold our HUNA workshop in Kona twice a year. And he came into the workshop and he said, you know, I've been here two or three times now. He said, I love HUNA, Ho'oponopono. He said, I love this. My family member is stealing from me. I don't know how to forgive them because I would never do that. And I would say, of course you would never do that. I would never think that this Jungian idea of perception as projection is always this one-way, one-direction experience. I say, what is this theft to you?
What is what?
I asked him, I said, what is this theft that you are experiencing? What does it mean to you? What is it an example of?
Okay.
And he said that for him, it was an example of taking something without permission. And I said, okay, well, where are you taking something without permission? Or conversely, where are you letting someone take things from you without permission, and that you would need to enforce your boundaries there because it's a lesson. There's some sort of lesson.
So it might be that you're doing the same thing, or it might be that you haven't been able to protect yourself from this sort of thing before.
Exactly. So the energy is coming in or going out, one of those ways. And he immediately figured that out. He said, I'm not putting my foot down with my partner. My partner keeps taking my clients from me and my business.
Oh.
I said, you know what, no matter how much you forgive, no matter, you know, you can let go of your anger till the cows come home.
Yeah.
But if you don't one day get up and take action, and this is where the law of attraction really leads into the other laws of Huna magic, like the law of correspondence or the law of creation or the law of cycles and rhythms, you really got to get up one day and take action. And he did. He went back home. He put his foot down. And when he did that, he stopped experiencing and immediately found that the relative stopped taking and came forth and said, you know, I've been doing this. I feel guilty. Let me give you all the money back. He sent me an email. He said it was amazing how quickly his perception of the universe changed.
Wow. So hold on a second here. I got to check in with the listeners. I'm fascinated with this. For those of you who are wanting to pick up the phone, here's some telephone numbers. You can call toll-free. Yes, this is a live show, and yes, you are welcome to call in and ask our expert tonight, Dr. James, any questions you have about forgiveness. In a minute, we're going to be talking about forgiving a cheating spouse. So call-in numbers. For U.S., it's 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And those are both toll-free. And I've also got the fast chat open. The fast chat window is open. If you want to send me a little message, I will read your message on the air. And Dr. James will probably have something very amazing and informative to say about your comment or question. Anyway, how about we take that topic on cheating spouses? That's a tough one for a lot of people.
That's a big one.
How can you enlighten us about how to forgive a cheating spouse? And by the way, should we? Should we forgive that person if they've changed their ways, or even if they're still cheating? And how do you know? And
I know I was going on a TV show right after the whole John Edwards?
John Edwards and his affair.
Well, I mean, that
I got to do TV because of John Edwards, too. Maybe we should send him a thank you card.
I guess I can't thank him for that specifically, but I was going on the show the day after the news broke, and of course, that changed the entire topic of what I was talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, I was going to send a thank you card to Governor Elliot Spitzer, too, because he really got me a lot of press time, too.
Very nice. Now, here's the first thing, and I've worked with people who are in relationships. I worked with a woman who was cheating and was wondering what she should do because she had already told her husband about the situation. And I've worked with the other end of it, too, where I've worked with people that they were cheated on. And it's not my place to tell you whether or not you should forgive a cheating spouse.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. The very first thing when I've worked with couples is I say, is there room for forgiveness? And I've had couples say no. That's it. That's a boundary for me, and there's no going back. And so it's up to the individual whether or not they forgive. Here's what I am really clear about, though. Whether or not you're going to forgive the spouse to remain in the relationship or forgive the spouse and get out of the relationship, either way you should forgive your spouse. The reason why is that if you don't, and you're leaving the relationship, you take that negativity, you take that reason, that reason why or the purpose from that old relationship into the new one.
Absolutely.
I've said to people either way, from a Huna perspective, that you would want to forgive and that you would want to begin to rebuild the trust with yourself and with your partner, whether it's a new partner or the same partner that had the transgression. So either way, right out of the bat, it's a personal decision. And then on top of that, it is a requirement to forgive so that you then do put a positive into the relationship, whether it's new or the same relationship.
Okay, so that, of course, this all is easier said than done.
Of course.
So basically the person checks in with themselves and sees, am I willing to work on forgiveness? Do I want to stay in this, or am I not? But if you talk to somebody who says, no, it's unforgivable, you tell them, okay, you don't want to stay in the relationship, but you're still going to have to move towards the direction of forgiving just to free yourself from it.
Exactly. And so in that instance, it's pretty easy because it's actually easier, in my opinion, and with the work that I've done with individuals one-on-one, it's easier for the person who's getting out of the relationship because they can do something like the Ho'oponopono process where they forgive the person, they do this work in their mind, and then they can separate and get into a new relationship. It's the person that's staying in the relationship that really needs to begin to do some work. And the first step that I say is once you have gotten the forgiveness, once you have achieved forgiveness with someone, the next step is that you have to find a way to begin to rebuild the trust. And an easy way to do that is to make a new commitment. Now, Huna teaches that there are four aspects to who you are. There's the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, and the physical. The thing in Western thinking is that we make these commitments in our relationships on the physical level. We say, I'll be faithful to you, but I'm going to look at other people. Well, the problem with that is that when you look at other people, there's a trickle-down effect. It goes from the spiritual to the mental to the emotional to the physical. If you begin to look, but you say, I'm going to look, but I'm not going to touch, eventually the looking will get boring. And then people are, I mean, what is the stat? 70% of married couples are now in online chat rooms getting emotionally attached to other
this
people.
This is what I hear.
It trickles from the mental. We're looking, but we're not touching. Now we're getting this emotional charge. Well, it's only a matter of time before it trickles down into the physical. Papa Bray clearly taught that when you are in a relationship, you have to make the commitment on all four levels, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. And that doesn't mean you never look at another person again. That would be called living in a cave. And I'm against that. I'm all for living in society. It's that those looks that you give the opposite sex, or the same sex if that's your relationship, the look that you give to your partner should only be with your partner. The emotions that you give to your partner should only be with your partner. And if you begin to find yourself straying, you need to keep your attention and focus on all four levels in the relationship. So you make a new commitment on all four levels.
Now, just as a sexologist, I embrace a lot of different relationship modalities. To me, what's important is that there's integrity. So that's definitely a monogamous view of relationships.
And in ancient times in Hawaii, there was literally in the language, there was no vulgarity, and there was nothing that was seen as sexual, as being evil, dirty, or nasty.
Mm-hmm.
So my talk is specifically geared for monogamous relationships, and I do want to be really clear. In ancient times in Hawaii, there were people that were lifetime flirts, and that was as acceptable as the person that gets into a relationship and makes a lifetime commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And there was everything in between that.
I just want to be clear. Some of my listeners are polyamorous, so they have many loves.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, but there was no judgment about that in ancient times in Hawaii. It's when you bring up the concept of cheating, it is linked with monogamy, because if you are in a polygamous relationship,
it's not actually because a polyamorous can also accommodate the concept of cheating because there's negotiated parameters. So any time you step out of whatever has been negotiated, and it varies from situation to situation, and you know, various couples or triads or have their own arrangements, but there is always an understanding of expected behavior.
Okay.
So, and to me, that's my definition of cheating, is any time you deviate from this contractual relationship, because any time you're in a relationship with somebody, there is something of a contract.
I would understand
of what the parameters are, what it includes, what it doesn't include, who else is in this picture, who is not in this picture. And when you violate that, then you are taking something by theft, because that person did not agree to those terms.
Yeah, and Puna has a really interesting way of looking at it, and that is that this contract that you're talking about would need to be made on all four levels of who you are, the spiritual, the mental, the emotional, and the physical. And the reason for that is that these are the four aspects of who we are, and when you enter into a contract with someone else, it's as if you've created a bubble around the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
This bubble contains all of the energy, or mana, that is the life force energy of the relationship. And any time you take any one of those four aspects and take it outside of that bubble, you literally poke a hole in it. You poke enough holes in it, and all of the energy leaks out of the relationship. And then you have what in English we would say a dead relationship. And that's where the two people have no more spark, no more fire in their relationship.
Yes.
And so I agree, irregardless of how many partners you have, if you've made a commitment, you take the HUNA approach, and what that does is it makes the commitment on all four levels and keeps the spark, it keeps the fire. Next year, my wife and I will have been together for 10 years, and I still have that spark and fire for her that I did when we were just dating. And so there are ways to keep that flame burning in the relationship, and it's an amazing experience.
Absolutely. I'm divorced. But I just spent a week with my ex-husband, and we get along. At this particular time in our life, we were married for 13 years. But at this particular time in our life, we prefer not living together and not being married. But we've known each other for 25 years, and if you really are showing up on all those levels that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Then the connection is a living, breathing organism.
And that's it. And we've all experienced that in a relationship, usually in the beginning. The difference between making a commitment on all four levels of who we are is that you keep that living, breathing feeling going. And I've worked with couples to rekindle this. I had two couples that were in my seminar this past September that had lost that. They have it back now. They're saying to me it's like they're dating again, and yet they've been together for over 20 years. And so you can get it back.
Absolutely.
If you want to.
I teach workshops on this too, rebirthing the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so much fun because in my workshops, people actually come to have sex with their partner. And that's like the focus for them is, she's going to teach us some great sex techniques. But we spend like the first 2 hours just working fully clothed on the emotional issues. And there's usually a certain amount of resistance about that. We don't want to work on that.
And you have to. It trickles down into the physical. We all agree with that.
It does. And it's amazing how many people will come in telling me that they have a totally egalitarian relationship. Nobody's, dominating or submissive, and they have no problems, but I give them one simple exercise and all hell breaks loose. It's like, okay, good, now we have something to work with. And I really like to take people into their anger and frustration, because a lot of times it seems to me that people have no tools for dealing with conflict, and that this is an area that can be, you know, create a deadening experience in the lack of passion, because you're kind of cut off from a part of yourself. So do you think that anger has anything to do with the process of forgiveness?
Oh, sure. Before we do any forgiveness work, we go through a series of releases that the word would be ho'oku, to release the negative emotions. In ancient times in Hawaii, you didn't hold these things inside yourself. You would, if they came up, you would let them go, because they only came up because you were ready to release them. So you would never hang on to them. And in Western thinking, when these, what Papa Bray referred to as black bags, when these black bags would pop up in your face, in Western thinking, we push them back down, and we think, I'm not supposed to deal with this. It's not right for a man to feel sad. Or I've worked with women who say women aren't supposed to be angry. Or, I mean, I've heard everything in between. And the idea in Western thinking is to push that black bag back down. In the Hawaiian tradition, in Huna, you release it. When it comes up, that means it's ready for resolution. It means it's ready to be released.
Hmm.
And so people, I think, they tend to push it down because of what they've been taught. And you're right. When you suppress it or you repress that too much, all it does is it builds up till the point of explosion. And something will explode in the relationship. I've seen that happen too many times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and as far as, you know, since sex is the thing that I specialize in, it has a really deleterious effect on sexual functioning. So that people will say, oh, well, you know, this used to work for me, it doesn't work now. And I go, well, let's go find your anger. Let's go find your anger. And like, that, what's that have to do with sex? They go, trust me, it has everything to do with it. And it's really been fun to actually help some people breakthrough blockages in sexual function that they had, and they had no idea that it was connected to, you know, an issue that they were suppressing. It takes a lot of energy to push emotions down.
It does. It really does, and it takes away energy from the relationship then, which is, again, counterproductive to what the relationship really wants. The relationship wants a constant flow of energy and a connection.
Well, what does forgiveness have to do with, obviously, I think it's the benefits for a long-term relationship are pretty obvious for a lot of people. If you want to go forward, you're probably going to have to do that. But let's talk a little bit more about forgiving a cheating spouse when you've decided that you cannot and will not accept that behavior and you're going to leave the relationship. This is a rather nuanced concept. Can you shed a little light on it?
Well, sure. And first of all, again, there's not a lot of judgment, having been brought up in this as a part of my own lineage. There's not a lot of judgment that I have in relationships. I worked with a woman who had been cheated on, and she said, that's it, I'm done. And she was in my training. I think we were in Toronto. She was in my training in Toronto, and she said, I'm done, what should I do? And I said, well, from a legal standpoint, we're in Canada. I said, I can't, of course, I'm not familiar enough with the legal system. That's, you need to deal with that. Here's what you need to do from a mental and emotional standpoint. You have to be willing to release and to let go of the negative emotions that you feel in the relationship. You need to begin to open up the realm of forgiving. And you need to let go of being in charge of getting your ex-husband back. And that was the one that really caught her. And I said, in ancient times in Hawaii, no one person was the enforcer of someone else's karma. It's not your job to punish the person that cheated. And I think that's one of the things that we hold on to in Western thinking. We think that when someone has done us wrong, that it's our job to get revenge. It's our job to make that person suffer. And she openly admitted to me. She said, oh, my goodness. She goes, I wasn't even thinking about that. I was going to forgive him but still make it my job to punish him.
Mm.
And I said, the problem with that is that if you hold on to that, then you make the actions in your life about punishing people. That puts that energy out. In some way, shape, or form, it's going to come back to you because energy is an alternating current. She said, what should I do? I said,
oh, wait a minute. Energy is an alternating current. I think you said that earlier in the program.
That's correct.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead. I really want to come back to that.
Okay. Well, I mean, this would be a good place for it. Energy is an alternating current.
I mean, that's an awesome concept, because just know that alternating current, you know, we kind of get that because it's a tangible. Now, if you can understand that your emotions are going to come back at you, like if you're actively wanting to seek revenge and hate somebody, it's going to come back to you.
Not necessarily from the person that you're seeking revenge on. It could come back in any area of your life. Just like in the example with my student who the family member was stealing from him, that there was something that he was putting out there that was bringing that back. And look, this isn't about fault or blame. It's not about you're at fault for what other people are doing to you. It's really about gaining control over your own experience. It's about you becoming empowered. Energy flows like an alternating current, not just on the metaphysical level, as I'm talking about with Huna, on the physical level, electricity. You can get electricity as a direct current in a car. I am aware of that. And most of the electricity that we experience in our household flows like an alternating current. You make a circuit. In ancient times in Hawaii, it was believed, before there was even electricity now, that when you connect with someone, you create a circuit, and that there's an energy flow going out and an energy flow coming back. And if you cut either one of those, you lose the connection with the person. You need both. You have that in all areas of your life. And so I said to the woman, look, if you take punishment or revenge and put that out there, that's going to flow back to you. It might flow back directly from him. Maybe he'll come back after you. Maybe it'll flow from someone else. Maybe it will flow from a totally different area of your life. You're going to put that energy out. It's going to have to come back. Mm. And so she did the process. She did the techniques, and then she let go of being in charge of punishing him. And the funny thing is that she said what she thought initially was going to be a huge struggle with a divorce that was going to be dragged out, as soon as she just let go of that need to punish, it's as if he changed all of a sudden and that he was willing to let go of needing to make this a difficult divorce.
Oh, yes.
It split. The split was fast. It was easy. And they're still able to talk now, which apparently is pretty rare in most divorces. Most of them just don't want to ever see each other again. And they said they remained friends. And she really credits letting go of needing to punish him as a part of that.
It's amazing when you just shift the energy. You don't even have to say or do anything. But shifting that energy can really just give you a completely different result.
Exactly.
So, okay. So the two reasons is what I'm hearing. Two reasons: you're leaving a relationship because you've decided this person cheated on me, I find it unacceptable, I'm not going to stay in this relationship. However, I am going to forgive them for at least two reasons. One, I want not to take this into the next relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And two, emotions are, say that again, they're alternating energy?
Well, the energy flows like an alternating current.
Okay. So and the energy of our emotions is like an alternating current?
Energy in general.
Just energy in general.
That's related to our thinking. In the Huna system, the energy of the mental body or the mental aspect of who we are is related to the air element, and the air element rules our thinking. And so the energies that feel more like the energy of the air would be still flowing like an alternating current between two people.
So since I don't want this resentment and anger to come back on me, I need to forgive.
Right, exactly.
And the proper way to forgive is to actually say, please forgive me, and I forgive you?
That's the way to do it in Western thinking. Well, I'm using English here. In the Hawaiian vocabulary, there was no words for I'm sorry, because even communication itself implies that you are making a connection with someone. When you're talking to someone, they're listening, and you usually look for a response, which is the energy coming back. Even if it's a simple nodding of the head, that's still a communication.
Okay.
Oh, so in our communication,
it sounds like we got a caller. Huh? Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, do you have a question for Dr. James?
Yes, this is really up my alley because I'm having quite a bit of problems with forgiveness and a family issue involving an estate battle that's been going on for 2 years, and I'm just not going to be able to have a relationship with my siblings after this because it's become so ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize it's hurting me to hold on to all this anger about it, but I really don't think I can have a relationship with them after this. But how do I let go of my end of it?
Well, that brings up a really great point. And when I got my degree, the focus of my research was on forgiveness, and I looked at Western models of forgiveness. And one of the biggest misconceptions in psychological research on forgiveness is that you have to become best friends with the person you forgave. In ancient times in Hawaii, forgiveness didn't imply anything other than the fact that you let go of the negative aspect of the situation. In fact, in ancient times, if someone had done you wrong and you forgive them, that you can then just say, I'm done, but you would walk away from the relationship with clear thinking, with a positive intention, with positive focus. In other words, it's healthy to have boundaries in your life. You're right, there's a ton of research on how negative it is for the body, physical body, to hold on to unforgiveness. There's research that it elevates blood pressure, stress levels, reduced health. So letting go of this or letting go of your unforgiveness towards your siblings will be beneficial to you. And when you've done that, you can then create a boundary and just from a healthy, positive perspective say, you know, first time is shame on you. Second time is going to be shame on me. There's no more second time. This is it. Here's the boundary. We're done. But you want to do that from a positive perspective.
It's still healthy to not have a relationship with them. I can still make that decision in a healthy way.
Absolutely. And I would absolutely say to you, there are people in my life that it would not be healthy for me to be around. We've all had friends or loved ones that have gone down paths that just are not for us. To see them go down that path and to be angry, to be sad, to be afraid about it, though, that only hurts us. To see them go down that path and say, that path's not for me, I wish you the best. I guess the English way would be to say goodbye and good luck. Goodbye and good luck. I wish you the best. I send my love and here's my boundary. We're done. That's it. And when you walk away like that, then you walk away with your own positive and health intact. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's tough, though. Thank you so much.
So be okay to walk away from it. Yeah, be okay to walk away from it and to say, these are my boundaries. That's absolutely positive to have.
All right.
Thank you, caller. Thank you. And, oh, by the way, this would probably be a good time for us to tell everybody how they can contact you, Dr. James, because, you know, our show is going to be off the air here in a few minutes. And I bet there's people who wish they had called in who might have more questions for you. How can they reach you?
Well, we have a website that has a lot of our information on it. It's huna.com, H-U-N-A.com. And in addition to that, if people want to call up our office, our number is 800-800-MIND, M-I-N-D, 800-800-MIND. And I think that does work in the U.S. and Canada because we do a lot of business in Canada. I'll actually be going to Vancouver, British Columbia, next year sometime, I think in April or May.
Now, you have articles on your website, but no book yet, right?
No, I've written a ton of articles, and I've had a lot of people request books. Most of the things that I've put out so far have been either in articles or we have a CD of Ho'oponopono, just a single CD for people that want to very easily find out more about the process. And so the Huna tradition was more oral. Hawaiian was very oral. And so I've looked at putting things down into a book, and sometimes the oral tradition or the oral passing of information is a very powerful way to do that.
I seemed to me like that probably was more of in line with the tradition than to actually write it down. I don't know how it is for Hawaiian traditions, but I've studied a little bit about a Native American traditions. It can also be very difficult to translate it and even put it in a book. I mean, the whole idea that a book is read from front to back is sometimes not in line with indigenous concepts, which are more circular.
Very true. Very true. It's also been difficult for some of the CDs that I've created. We found that they've worked out very well. I mean, the CDs that we have that guide people through the forgiveness process, like Ho'oponopono, have worked very well. And at first, we really wanted to make sure that it captured the essence of it, because communication does require feedback. And without that there, it's difficult to sometimes gauge that communication or the energy in the communication.
Yeah, true enough. Well, will you come back? Will you come back to the show?
Oh, sure, I'd love to.
I think it's awesome, and maybe next time we'll get more callers and we can actually help some people with the forgiveness process, because I think that's something we all struggle with. And it's horrible. It could keep you up at night.
Oh, definitely. I know. Yeah, that's true. I work with people that it just keeps them up at night. It dominates their thinking, their focus. And when you release that, when you put that baggage down, it's so freeing. You can move down your path and really begin to fulfill yourself and fulfill who you are.
You can open up your joy, your creativity, and your sexuality, all of that. It's just, you know, your ability to connect with other people, become more intimate. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, I've really enjoyed having you on the show, and I want to thank you, and thank you, our caller, and our listeners, and one more time, that website is www.huna, H-U-N-A. It's just like tuna, but with an H, huna.com.
I'll have to remember that.
Yeah, huna.com, and yeah, okay. So I'm going to go practice forgiving my mother's pastor.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. James.
Thank you very much, Veronica. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Veronica Monet offers help, healing, and hope in the form of private telephone sessions. Email veronica@sexwithoutshame.com to schedule an appointment, or visit www.sexwithoutshame.com to find out what Veronica can do for you.